Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network, sponsored by TBILaw.com. For automatic reminders about this radio show and other great survivor events, sign up now for TBISN.org.
When Attorney Gordon Johnson speaks about recovery, he isn't talking about the amount of money a survivor gets from a lawsuit or settlement. He is talking about getting better from the brain injury. Find him on the web at TBILaw.com or call 800-992-9447.
Welcome to Dream Catchers on the Brain Injury Radio Network with your host, Les Paul Morgan.
Hello, hello, hello in Brain Injury World. This is Les Paul Morgan, and how are you doing tonight? We're hoping that Blog Talk Radio will perform just wonderfully tonight. You just never know. I'm going to ask everybody early to call in as a backup plan because Blog Talk has crashed on us several times, and if you stay on the phone, you can stay on even if the phone system crashes. And the number is showing a number right now. Let me see. Hold on. I'm not seeing the regular number. Sorry about that. Did they change it on me? Hold on. Well, anyway, I'm so happy that everybody can be here tonight. You know, we live in a world of changes, a world of all kinds of things, but I titled tonight's show Lost and Found: Life After Brain, After TBI or Brain Injury, whatever you want to say. And the reason I said that is I'm sure if you've had a brain injury, you have felt lost, found, and maybe lost again and found, and then lost and found and lost and found over and over again to the point you feel like you don't know what's going on around you. But we're here to say there is hope for you, us as a team, hope for a nation, a world, people that are seeking information, technology, resources, tools, all kinds of wonderful things to help us learn how to be as independent as possible, how to be codependent upon one another to help each other. As our friend and other talk show host on Brain Injury Radio often says, interdependent. I'm not stealing his pen, but I really like how he says that because we do depend on one another. When I say independent living, I don't mean I want to go live on a desert island all by myself and hide in a cave. Independent living means independent where you're strong enough to regain life again on your own and start making your decisions, because a lot of times after a traumatic brain injury happens, so many people took over for us and took our place and lived our life for us because we didn't know where we're at or our condition was so severe that we weren't expected to survive. It'll scare our parents. It'll scare our families. It'll scare our friends. And people who didn't necessarily have the best intentions also will get involved and say, well, here's my opportunity. So people take advantage of you too. And so we're here to help you find yourself after being lost and become found. I tell you what, during my traumas and my brain injuries, my aneurysms, my cerebral hemorrhages, all the different things I've had happen to me, I had to surrender my life to other people. My father, I'm told, did my checkbook most of the time. I wasn't capable of even calculating with a calculator. I didn't know what numbers were. I remember several months after I'd come home from the hospital, I would be sitting on the sofa in the living room in a daze. I have faint memories of this, and my mother would be saying, Les Paul, do you want to do your checkbook? Aaron's saying, what's a checkbook? Checkbook. I've heard that name before. Checkbook. What do you do with a checkbook, Mom? I mean, I was calling her Mom again. I barely knew who she was and really forgot who she was in my family when I had my brain injuries. And so I had to depend or become interdependent, as our buddy always says on his show, on everybody. I wasn't able to take care of myself if it wasn't for my family. And I know you've all heard me say that my father was violent at times and things, but sometimes it was due to his medications and it was due to his bipolar illness and mental illness he had. Sometimes he would actually be nice to me, and he would do my checkbook for me the best he could. And while he was doing all right, he seemed to do all right, and other times he'd mess it all up. But he really tried to help me, and other times my mother would do it for me, and my mother eventually handed me my checkbook and said to my father, "Ed, you give your son back his checkbook." And I think that was over a year or 2 years later, maybe even three. It was such a fog, I don't remember. And when I was holding my checkbook, I didn't know what the thing really was. I'd say, "Mom, I know I used to do this, but I can't remember what I did." I mean, imagine how any of us who are out there in brain injury world, that you once were writing in your checkbook or driving your car or whatever, and suddenly all that's taken away from you. And that's why I titled the show Lost and Found, because if you feel lost in your brain injury, I hope you'll be found through Brain Injury Radio Network. I hope you'll be found in a new way, that you'll be an advocate instead of feeling disabled. I want you to feel enabled. I want you to feel positive. I want you to start turning the negatives away and pushing them farther and farther. And I know they're hard. If I sound like a load of, you know what, I tell you what, I've been there and lived through that fire. I used to think people were telling me a lot of lies. "Mr. Morgan, we know that someday you'll be able to do these things again." "Yeah, right." And my mother would say, "Les Paul, I know you can do it again. I have full faith in you. I believe in you." And I'd be sitting there hearing it, understanding portions of it, but then other things were just a total confusion. But for a moment, I just want to bring on one of our hosts, just in case there's any problems. I'm seeing the screen and everything. Kim, are you there? Okay, here it goes. Kim, are you there?
Hi there.
I pressed the button and nothing happened for several seconds. I just want to make sure everything's going all right on...
Yeah, I'm here, and maybe I just got here too early and could have refreshed under my own account, but I signed in as the co-host because I didn't see your chat room.
Oh, well. Is it there now?
I'm watching it.
Okay.
Yep, I'm looking at the chat and the studio. Everything sounds really good, too.
I just wanted to make sure, because we've had, for people who are listening out there, we've had a lot of problems with Blog Talk Radio having major issues where we've lost connection during our shows. Our founder, Craig Cecilia, last night, about halfway through his show, started having problems, and he couldn't see his screen or anything. So far I can see mine. I don't know if everyone's getting the information properly, but we'll just carry on as if it is.
Keep calm and carry on, as they
say.
That's
right. And I'll be honest, when I first came on, I was a little bit nervous. I said, "Man, what's wrong with you? It doesn't matter. You just do it." And somehow the calmness came back, because I heard you say that you felt nervous the other day because you didn't know what to expect because of all the problems we've had lately.
That's exactly right. And, you know, it was kind of like that right after the brain injury, you know. You were going along having your life the way you would have your life, and all of a sudden it just changes. And we got kind of spoiled in the first few months. You know, there were little issues here and there, but you take a person like me who's already a little challenged sometimes and have them screw up our network for 2 weeks, and I've felt like a deer in the headlights, just praying like meatloaf, not praying for the end of time, but just praying that radio is going to come on the way it's supposed to.
I know what you mean. When I first came on, I've got two computers in my house, and one's a laptop and one's a desktop. I went on my laptop, and it crashed right after I started it for the show, about 15 minutes before it started. I said, "Oh, boy." And I went to start it again, and it crashed again. And it was going through Mozilla Firefox. And so it took so long, I just went to my other computer and said, "Okay, sit here, be peaceful." I was still a little bit nervous, and I was saying, you know, life is too short to allow this to get me. And I don't know, an instant calmness came across me. Whatever will be, like que sera, sera from Doris Day.
Yeah.
And somehow that just brought a peace across me. And, you know, there are a lot of TBI survivors all over this country and all over the world right now. They're in need of support and kindness and friendship that just need to call into Brain Injury Radio whenever they can and be part of the story of the new life after brain injury. Would you like to say any more? I mean, you can say all you want.
No, I was just kind of following your lead and covering your back. I figure that's the least we could do as long as we're all nervous about it. It's good to have somebody in the co-pilot seat just in case, you know, we have to do something.
That is
like
right.
And
that, you know, Kim, you are a wonderful co-pilot. I appreciate you so much because you've helped us all out at different times. We've all helped each other out at different times. And that's one of the things I believe Craig wanted to see happening with Brain Injury Survivors Network is to see people not treated as if they're a disability anymore and as if they don't matter despite our injuries. And in honor of the people who died, I think we deserve to think of ourselves at a higher level because we need to. We should. And
yeah.
So I'm sitting here looking at my other computer saying, okay, as long as he holds on, I'm going to keep on going.
That's what we do here.
I know it. Piece by piece, knitting it together or gluing it together with super glue, maybe a welding torch, who knows.
Yeah.
I think about the different people who've had brain injuries all over the world, and, you know, somebody might have been on their bicycle and fallen off the very first time they rode their bike.
Yeah.
I remember when I got my first bicycle, it was a bicycle with a banana seat on it.
I think I
was 9 years old. No, 7 years old, I'm sorry. And I lived in a place that the road went around a long curve and down a hill. I didn't know what I was doing at all, never ridden a bicycle. And I think I was more like five, the more I think about it. But my brother Phil, who was 5 years older than me, he says, I'll give you a push and give you a start. And I said, what do I do? And he said, you don't know how to pedal a bike? I said, I've never ridden one. Show me. And his buddy, who knew me but not well, he says, I'll show you. And he ran towards the bicycle before I could even hit the brakes or anything and pushed me flying down a hill down that road. And it was a real steep road. And the bike's going flying. I didn't know how to steer it, didn't know how to ride it, nothing. I was just a little kid, never been on a bicycle. And I go across yards, and each one has a bump and a driveway. And I was going up and down.
Oh, my God.
The bicycle goes flying over me, and then and then I go over it. It was going real fast. That was my very first bicycle ride. That could have been a brain injury right there. Unfortunately, it wasn't. But we learn by our errors and mistakes. I was a little kid at the time. You think I would have ever thought of brain injury? That was back in the 1960s. I wouldn't have thought of that. Hardly anybody did back then.
No.
I had that same
bike you did. It did the same thing. Not with a brother, but just going down a steep hill, I hit some gravel and flew over my handlebars, and I did land right on my forehead, and I got one of those things our moms used to call a goose egg or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
And interestingly, it was on the left front of my head where 100 years later I had an aneurysm. I don't know if there's any connection.
I wonder if there's a correlation. You just never know for sure.
I got a big old goose egg, and they had the old don't let her fall asleep or she'll wake up dead, you know, back when they had those rules.
And today, what would they call that?
Well, that was like a concussion. Concussion kind of a thing.
And what is a concussion? A brain injury. So you probably had one as a child. I'm not saying you did, but it's very possible you did.
Well, the more I hear on the show, the more interesting I find it, because I did that, you know, probably when I was a little older than you. It wasn't my first bike ride, my first time at that rodeo, but it was the first time I went over the handlebars, so what, 8 or 9 or something, and then in my early 20s I got in a car accident and my head, again, my forehead, the left side of my head hit the windshield and cracked it out.
Oh boy.
And then had some problems in a domestic disturbance kind of thing in my later 20s where I took a blow to the head. And so it's interesting because, you know, when I wrote my book, I was just writing my isolated story about my aneurysm, and now in the time that I've spent on the radio, I hear about all the impact of cumulative blows to the head,
yeah,
and that they're looking at that kind of thing now, and they didn't think anything of it. Like you said, back in the 60s when we were kids, you know, you just, if it wasn't bleeding or didn't need stitched up, you know.
I know. I know what you mean. And if you had a bunch of buddies with being a guy, it's like, oh man, toughen up. Are you a sissy? I wouldn't ever make a noise unless I'd really hurt myself bad. Well, when I was 11 years old, my brother Steve comes all the way from California with two racing motorcycles on the back of an El Camino, Chevrolet El Camino. He called just minutes before he got there and said, be out in the front yard. I got something I want to show you. And I said, well, where are you, in California? Yeah, that's right. And I heard beep, beep, just like 30 seconds later, and there were two motorcycles sitting in the back of an El Camino. One was a Yamaha 100 for my brother Phil, and one was called an Indian MX-74. It stood for 70 cc's with four gears.
Mm.
And I had been wanting a mini bike because I was just 11. I was thinking, okay, I won't get a motorcycle, but maybe a mini bike. And it was a beautiful yellow racing motorcycle. It was super fast.
Wow.
But the first thing he did, instead of just saying, okay, take off, buddy, and he raced professional motocross. I mean, he was a super motocross racer. The guys that go way up in the sky jumping and doing stunts and things, all kinds of crazy stuff that just looks like it's beyond human toleration. It looked like he'd break every bone in your back. Well, he walked up and said, guess what? I said, what, Steve? Wow, I can't believe we got a motorcycle. Yay! And he goes, but you're not going to ride it yet. And I said, what? Please? Thank you. No, you're not going to touch that motorcycle, not until you read this book. And he had a brown book that I still have to this very day, and it was a motorcycle safety course that I had. He made it like a safety exam or a safety test that I had to pass before he would allow me to ride the motorcycle. That night, I was up almost the entire night reading the entire book. I couldn't wait to get on my motorcycle. I said, please let me ride it, please. He said, you're not going to touch that thing because your mom in there, she'll kill me if you hurt yourself on that thing. He said, I'm going to test you when you finish. And I wish everybody who got a motorcycle would do this.
Not kidding. How forward thinking of it.
Yeah, and that was 1970s. And back then, you just got on the roads. But he said, I'm not going to have my brother scattered all over the woods somewhere because it was a motocross dirt bike, and it was real fast and real powerful. And so he tested me on it. He made me make sure I knew how to make it stand on the kickstand and know what left and right, know when it's safe to cross the road, know the rules and regulations that you have to follow even though it doesn't have a license because it's an off-road motorcycle. And I wish I would see that happen today. I still don't think it's happening enough. And so I got on that thing, and he was amazed, and so was I, that I could ride it fairly good from the very beginning. I wanted one so bad. But I loved motocross, and that's a very dangerous sport. But
yes.
But you have to really learn how to ride. I don't know if you know what a whoop-de-doo is. That's if you ever watched a motocross race at all, it's where they carve these trenches and you go across them on the motorcycle and it just pounds your body and you can't go fast because it's across bumps. And it wears you out. And to the very best of my knowledge, motocross is still considered the most strenuous sport in all the world. Most people don't know that. In fact, motocross racers hang out with fighter pilots. And I've actually seen television shows where people who fly F-15 and F-16 fighter planes and different fighter planes, they tend to hang out with motocross racers, and they both like to hang out together. And it showed the motocross racers flying in the fighter jets with the fighter pilots, and then them get out of the fighter jets and go race motorcycles together in the woods because it's such an extreme G-force on the body and on the brain. So a lot of injuries happen on motorcycles and things, even though it's really a fairly safe thing despite the injuries that do happen. But several people have had brain injuries and died in motocross.
Oh, I'm sure. We had a kid in my neighborhood. He lived, Greg Tice, he lived on the back the street behind us and across the street from that, and he was very active in motocross.
Okay.
Yeah, I think he lost some skin along the way, at the very least. In fact, I haven't seen him for a long time, and the town's not that big. I hope
you need to check on him now that we talked about this. Oh, no.
Oh, God,
I'm not
poor
saying
Greg.
Anything like that. But on that note, in my own neighborhood, which is I have a highway going right past my house, but for some reason all-terrain vehicles go flying down the highway, and they're not legal to do, it's not legal to do that. They go flying down the highway, passing cars all the time, and it'll be young kids, sometimes an adult with their baby riding on it, going 60 and 70 miles an hour down the highway, passing cars and zigzagging in between them. I've actually called the police one or two times and told them, I said, and they just say, what do you want us to do about it? And I said, keep somebody from dying.
Well, yeah, that's dangerous.
It's very dangerous. And I live in a kind of a rural area, even though the city of Augusta is not far away and Aiken's fairly big. But in between, there's a lot of rural area. And over a period of 10, 11 miles, it changes back and forth. And they tend to go up and down paved highways riding that. And that's illegal, by the way. And I've put signs out sometimes for motorcycle safety and all-terrain vehicle safety. And I didn't mean to get talking so much about it, but it needs to be talked about because a lot of children are just waiting to get their first ride, and they need to be having their parents holding them accountable, because I don't want to see some kid go get on an ATV for the first time and have a brain injury.
Yeah, I'm really worried about that. It's funny you'd bring that up, because my grandkids' other grandparents have one of those vehicles, and they own some property out in the country. I think that's probably why they had them in the first place, was to take them off-road, but they were just riding around the neighborhood and going in, and she had one of the little grandgirls on the front of it, and she hit the gas instead of the brake. And it caused the thing to flip, and she, in protecting the child, took a bad blow to her shoulder. Her collarbone is broken.
Mm.
She got hurt really bad, and I thought about, God, what, I mean, I hate it that she got hurt. She's our age, you know, but she had the six-year-old on the front of it, and they... Now the kids, the parents of these children, are talking about getting one of these child-size contraptions for the six-year-old. I'm like,
well,
really?
Is that a good idea, really?
Do they really need one of those? I mean, everybody I know that has had one of those, they're big around lake housing out in the country here. People get them, and they're always getting hurt.
I hear it all the time. I really do.
Me too. Scares me to death, especially a six-year-old. What do they need that for? They're barely triking it at that time.
Sometimes the parents are a little bit gung-ho about, I want my kid to know how to ride one, but do they think about the safety aspect? And I know some do very much, but there are people who don't. And I'll just use a dear friend of mine that I haven't seen her in a long time. I hope she's doing well. Her name is Carla. And her boyfriend talked her into going on a ride on his motorcycle, and she'd never ridden one. He'd been riding. He had a helmet, and there were two of them. He said, let's go for a ride. I don't want to go for a ride. And she said, let's not go for a ride. I really don't want to. I don't feel safe on that. And he goes, come on, honey, let's go for a ride. And so he talks her into going riding for her very first time on a motorcycle. He puts on a helmet. She doesn't have one. And takes off real fast and throws her off, and she hits the back of her head on pavement.
Oh, no.
At age 15, she had her first brain injury. I hope it's the only one she'll ever have. She's a lovely young lady. I've known her for a long time. She used to come to our support group meetings before she moved away. And I always felt so bad. I wonder if someone could have stopped that from happening to her. That's just one person, but one person's more than enough. And,
oh,
I mean,
yeah.
It affected her speech. It didn't affect her want to live. She would get after me and say, Les Paul, you get out there and live. And she had a really hard time speaking. She didn't speak like I'm saying. She'd get out there and live. Have some fun. She said, just because I've had this disability thing is not going to stop me. And that's what I want us all to think. We don't let our lives be stopped because of the brain injuries.
Right.
Live on because of them. I see we've got a caller at, in the 484 area code. Would you like to say anything?
Hi, Les. I was just listening. I'm sorry I missed last week's show. I just really liked the idea of tonight's show and what you were just saying. I thought about it, and it was really horrible about that child.
Yeah.
But what really makes me angry, and I'm sorry if this man hears me, but I'm really pissed off because he had the sense to put a helmet on himself but not his child.
I know what you mean. He should have had the decency, at least if he says he's going to take her for a ride, he ought to be the one without a helmet, and she should have it because she didn't want to go for a ride.
No
and
kidding.
And so that made him legally liable, in my sense. I don't know what happened, but she's a wonderful young lady. I haven't seen her in probably 4 or 5 years, maybe longer, but I always think about her.
I don't even think about legally liable. I think he's morally liable.
Exactly, very much. He should, in my book, someone who does something like that, that bad and wrong, should be responsible for the rest of their life for, in some way, destroying or harming another person's life. Because when she asked me to dance with her, and she had such a hard time, she had trouble walking and shook very bad, and her voice was very shaky. But she's full of life, and she's got the gusto in her. She's a fun person. She's not going to let that TBI she had get her down, but it has gotten her down to a certain level. But she's the kind of person that we'd all love to meet because she's very inspiring. I need to find out where she's at these days. Maybe have her as a guest on our show because she's an amazing young lady.
Yeah.
I would love to hear her. She sounds absolutely inspiring and so brave and incredible.
She is. I mean, when I first met her, I was very shy because of my brain injuries. And she'd say, we were at a brain injury dance. And I said, I don't want to dance. I don't want to make a fool out of myself because my balance was off and I didn't feel that good about myself. And I wasn't going to get out there and try to dance and trip on somebody or knock somebody down. And she's, you get out here now. And I said, no. And she goes, I mean now. And I said, okay. She said, you better listen, Buster. And we had a great time. And she was one of those people that kind of guided me to show that there's a lot of recovery after that TBI. And there are a lot of people out there doing things like that that you don't get to see all the time.
Right.
And Jenny, I think you're right. I mean, it's a shame that people don't feel morally obligated to help somebody after they're actually were at fault for doing it. They were both young. He was older than her, and he should have known better. But, my goodness, I wonder what happened to him if he forgot all about her and how she's doing today. Makes me want to go find out more about her after the show, and maybe tomorrow I'm going to try to call her, see if I can find her.
Yeah, I don't think you want to do it after the show. You're going to
wake
her up.
No, I don't mean tonight. I mean.
Hi, I haven't seen you in 100 years. Just was talking about you to a world full of people and said try to give you a call in the middle of the night.
Well, okay, I won't call her tonight then. But if you're listening, Carla, call in, please. Jenny, have you got any more you'd like to say?
Well, you had mentioned the idea of lost and found.
Yes.
And I was off yesterday because I had computer trouble, so I didn't even bother going on the phone because I completely, with a brain injury, I went oops and forgot that I could listen on the phone.
Oh.
I had to listen to Craig's show today. And what I realized is I had somebody that I hadn't talked to in a while that is a friend of mine, also a brain injury survivor, and she chatted to me and let me know. She said, I'm so glad to see that you're here. She said, I missed your post. And that just absolutely made me feel like, oh, my gosh, somebody really cares that I exist. That makes me feel bad.
We care that you exist. You're one of our heroes, young lady, whether you know it or not.
That's right.
Well, if it weren't for y'all, I would still be lost. And you guys make me feel so found and so at home and with family.
So here, that's why I don't like to say just Jenny as often, because you're not just Jenny, even though I know you like to say that. So I'm going to honor it. But just Jenny, you're an awesome lady. I just want to say that. Live from Blog Talk Radio and around the world, Jenny's awesome. But, you know, when
Jenny or Jennifer Stokely, I'm okay with that. I realize that that's my name. That's what I was born with. That's what I will die with. I'm Jennifer Stokely. I'm okay with that, too.
Okay. Well, that's fine then. Sometimes I get mixed up and I'll say either, so you'll probably notice that if I send you something. But some of the things I was talking about, let me see, I'm trying to get back on my focus, about the lost and found, for all the years that I did feel very lost, and there wasn't a found for several years. It's like there's a button, kind of like on the Blog Talk button that has been missing some nights. It's like, where's that button at? Where's my found button? I know there's got to be some way to find myself, find a new way to function after injury and rehabilitation and things. See, I went to the hospital for over 3 months when I had my first brain aneurysm, and when I came home, they sent me home because I guess my insurance went out. I had a good insurance policy, but I believe it ran out, and they didn't know what else to do with me. And they did. My mother told me they did rehabilitation inside the hospital, but I was so lost within myself, I don't even remember ever being there. The things I know about the hospital visit, I do know a lot of it because my whole family told me. It's like an out-of-body experience because I don't remember any of it. I don't even remember coming home. And,
wow.
And so several months later, that's when I fell. You know, I've told everybody I've fallen. And that snapped me out of it is when I fell down our steps and busted my knee and shins and everything, tore my jeans. It's like, wow, where am I? And blood was running down my kneecap. So I'd fallen and busted my kneecap really bad, and it was hurting like crazy.
God.
And it was cement steps, the brick kind, red brick.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe I tripped and fell down the corner because I probably, in my mind's eye, since I don't remember exactly how it happened, except when I hit the ground, I looked back and I saw the steps right behind me, and I was laying on my face, and my leg was twisted crazy. I believe I just stepped off the steps without looking down and never even stepped onto the steps. Just stepped out like I was walking.
Oh, my God. Pulled.
But it was the best thing that could have ever happened because they had told my family that we don't know if your son will ever function right again. Mrs. Morgan, Mr. Morgan, I hate to tell you, but your son's probably going to be like this for the rest of his life because we've tried everything we know how to try, and he's not responding to it. He's alive. He's able to move some. He can mumble, but he doesn't know where he's at. He's very lost within himself, and I didn't know I would ever be found. So that fall was a blessing. You know,
yes.
The very painful fall was one of the best things that could ever happen to me. I wonder what would have happened to me if I would have never fallen.
Well,
so
Les,
pain? Yes?
I have a story that is exactly like yours, but a little bit same but different. Because all
okay.
of our stories are the same but different.
Yeah.
I, too, fell down cement steps 3 years after my brain injury, and I thought I was doing so good, and I knew what was going on. And when I stepped back, there was no steps there, and I just tumbled down the stairs, and I shattered my tibia and ripped my ACL, and I was in couldn't put any support, knee brace for 6 months.
What's an ACL?
And that gave me time to really think about the fact that, wait a minute, I am brain injured, and that's what caused me, because I had so much confidence. I had forgotten that I had a brain injury. It let me remember and put me back on focus of where my life is going.
Well, it sounds like it worked, whatever made it happen. I'm sorry you fell and hurt yourself so bad, but look at you now. You're helping so many people. Look at all of you guys. You're all wanting to help people. I wonder what my life course would have been if none of this would have ever happened. I don't want to wish it upon anyone to have a brain injury, never. But it put my life in a whole different direction and a whole new meaning, whole new purpose. I mean, I get to go to work now, and I get to meet people that are enabled, not disabled, they're enabled because they believe that they have a purpose and a mission, and they don't want to give up, and that's what I believe about all you guys. I lost my train of thought there. How could you ever imagine that? Would either of you like to say anything while I'm trying to regain my... I lost my whole thing right there, but guess what? That happens.
What did you lose?
My thought. I lost the next words that I was going to say. They just vanished. It's all right. Would you like to say anything, Kim?
Yeah, I kept muting my mic because Libby's given me grief, so she would have been giving the listeners grief.
She might
too.
Be wanting to talk. Said,
I think
well.
She did. She's doing naughty things, so I took the gate down, and now she's probably in molesting her sleeping father.
Oh, no.
She wants to go on the radio and shout, I've got no stitches, I'm out of my onesies, yay!
Yeah, exactly. That sure didn't slow her up much, I'll tell you that. She runs like a greyhound.
Really?
Oh, my God. She's got the longest legs, and she's been taking the garden art. We've had a couple of nice days. I finally got to have my DJ says it's gorgeous out from the chat room. I have to say that I got to have my convertible all weekend. It was beautiful, just a picture-perfect spring weekend because we've had all that cold and rain. Well, tonight, a cold front has come through. We're going to have storms. The temperature is going to drop down in the 30s again. And it might snow tomorrow. This is like
oh
ungodly, never happens. This is like May, for God's sake.
I'm not meaning to laugh, but that's strange. Wow.
Well, I know. I got the irises are up like 6 inches. My magnolia bush had started to bloom. Or it has started to bloom. The peonies are coming up, and my bleeding heart bush, the buds on the lilacs, everything was looking really spring, and it was a beautiful. Yes, DJ, because it's going to snow. DJ wanted to know if Nebraska's the subject tonight. No, you have to catch up with the subject backwards, DJ, but I was just commenting it's going to be 3 days of hell now again all of a sudden. We got the weekend off for good behavior. Now it's going back to acting like winter again.
I tell you what, it's a strange weather year. We've had a lot of rain where I live to the point that my dog asked me to take him out last night, and I said, okay, we'll go out, Bandit. And all of a sudden the sky just poured. I was drenched in just a matter of seconds. I took off back in the house. It stopped raining. I went out again. It started raining. It's like it was a giant cloud just following me around, waiting to storm. And then it started lightning a lot. And I said, well, darn, when's this going to stop? A bad lightning storm. I mean, boom, boom, boom everywhere. And I think we're having strange weather all over the country right now.
I think so, too, because we're supposed to have that storm tonight. No rain, DJ. Do you guys ever get rain? You taunt me with your temperatures all the time, but you must get some bad. All winter, DJ has been bugging me because, you know, as the listeners know, he's also one of our hosts. I'm in Nebraska. He's in Florida, so he's been giving me grief all winter long, telling me about the nice temperatures there. We're supposed to be having them now. I don't know what's going to happen to all this stuff. Yep, lost and found. That was the topic. Okay, Les Paul.
Well, since DJ's there, would he like to talk about the lost and found? I'm sure he had a lot of lost and found objects and things and friends in his life. I'm sure we all have. DJ, would you like to come on?
Are you opening my mic?
It's open.
Sounds
I opened
like
it a few minutes ago.
Oh, my goodness. I'm on Brain Injury Radio. Wow.
You sure enough.
I can't even be honored to be on Brain Injury Radio. I've never been on Brain Injury Radio before.
Not ever, I know. It's just unheard of with you. Don't let the secret get out.
For Tim, we just held hands and walked 1.1 miles down to the store and back and got some and some bread and, yeah, whatever else. And it is beautiful here. It is absolutely beautiful. But I'm going to tell you, coming months, it is going to be one very dangerous place. A few years ago, I read something that is probably absolutely the truth. If it's not, I swear. Florida,
what?
South Florida gets 25% of all the lightning to
oh, my earth. Goodness.
25%
really?
Of lightning to earth strikes. In America, all 50 states, we get 25, one out of four. We get some serious storms in the afternoon, and it gets pretty scary.
Don't go to the golf course, DJ.
Well, I do ride my bike with 4, 5, 6 clubs sticking out of my Trek grocery bags. And
oh,
those are lightning rods.
No, not in rainy season.
Say, what a setup that is. Why? What's up with the bicycle? And I say, well, you don't want me driving a 4,000-pound gas tank in my condition. But
that's true,
no,
but I never thought of that. That must be hard.
I don't have good visual perception. Honestly, I can't even stand being in a car. You know, I've said it many times. I used to drive limousines in and out of Connecticut and then Boston, New York, LaGuardia, JFK. Jesus. I like life slow now on a bicycle. I could put 3 clubs on one side, 3 clubs on the other side, 1 shoe on both sides, and I shove the bases of the clubs into the opening of the shoe so they're sticking backwards, and I ride down the road, and people just go, you know, like Kevin says, WTF.
Yep.
Where's the folks?
Yeah.
We were really lucky. Keith Anthony and I got to watch DJ load his bike from scratch on a Skype call one night where they had the camera on. It was really incredible the way you packed everything. And you had your Garmin on there, too.
I would have liked to have seen that. I hear him talking about his Garmin on his bicycle all the time.
I know. Do you remember that, DJ?
A Garmin has 3 settings. It has automobile, it has pedestrian, and it has bicycle.
Yeah, mine does,
and
too.
A funny story, when I got literally thrown out of brain injury rehab back in June of 2009, I had a $1,400 move across the state, and I gave 2 men and a boys, or whatever the hell it's called, 2 men and a truck.
2 men and a truck.
Yeah.
You got that.
I gave them my Garmin, and I said, just follow this to Cocoa Beach, and you'll be fine. Well, my lawyers bought me a town car, and I went across the state, and I got there, and I sat at the McDonald's in Cape Canaveral, Cocoa Beach area, and I was sitting there for like 45 minutes. I was like, come on, you guys can't be that far behind. And they said, well, this thing keeps telling us to get off the highway. I said, oh,
it was in pedestrian mode, a bicycle.
Bicycle. It will not allow you to ride on I-4, I-75.
Oh, no.
And they listened to it. They listened to
it. I can picture
it.
That.
So here's what you do. luckily, the town car driver that I was sitting with had a Garmin, and I didn't remember back then how to do the settings and everything. He said, go to settings, go to this, go to that. And he said, now hit this. And as soon as they hit automobile, it said, turn left, drive 12 miles, then turn right. I was like, oh, boy.
And you're the one with the brain injury.
You know, I promote it on my shows so many times, and I'll always say it. Brain injury is the most complicated injury there is for anybody.
I agree.
Yeah, me too.
For a person, for a family, for a dog, for a cat, I don't give a damn.
Well, first of all,
the most complicated injury.
First of all, people don't believe you have one very often unless it's very visible, like other disabilities are. And secondly, they look at you with a strange look, like, okay, you've got a brain injury, then what's wrong with you? Like you've got something very bad wrong with you. They're afraid to be around you. And then your friends, after you've had it, will look at you like, am I safe to be around this guy? Because he doesn't remember who I am, that kind of thing. So it does have a lot of different stigmas attached to it. And
right.
When I had my brain injuries, I'm told that all my friends were afraid to come see me in the hospital because they said my injuries appeared so bad to them, and my whole head was all bandaged up and my hair was all shaved off, and I had a deep incision after they'd operated on me that my mother said I saw myself for the first time when I was lost in space, not knowing where I was at, and I just cried. I don't remember any of that. I don't remember seeing any of it, but she did. She said I just wept like a baby when I saw myself because I looked like a different person. And she said I mumbled, "Who is that?" and just passed back out.
Hmm.
So brain injury has so many different hidden faces or so many different ways of viewing it that it's almost beyond comprehension how to truly look at a brain injury person in the face and say, you mean you've had a brain injury? I can see it in that guy. I can't see it in this one.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to admit, I met a man who was a spinal cord injury survivor at a brain injury meeting one day, and virtually everything he had mimicked brain injury. And I said, how did you acquire your brain injury? And he said, am I going to have to tell somebody else the same thing I tell everybody else? He said, Les Paul, I know you work with the Independent Living Movement and you have a support group and everything. You ought to know better. And I said, I feel bad. What did I say wrong? I just still didn't know he had a spinal cord injury because he was around a bunch of brain injury survivors. He mimicked the look of brain injury, but he was a spinal cord injury survivor. I said, I'm sorry. And the guy was mad at me for a while. And he said, I forget sometimes that it can be a very hidden disability, and maybe it's just the way I presented myself. And so we became friends after that. But yes.
The brain goes all the way down to your L7 or whatever it is. The brain goes all the way down the spine. I don't know why people don't understand that.
That's true.
It goes all the way down. I post constantly and I'll do it again. I'm just not going to do it right now. I'm tired. But the chiropractors use that you can click on any part of the spine and it'll show you the nerves out to the, in C1 through C7 is all the nerves up to the brain and all that. And
exactly.
Then you got, lumbar spine and thoracic spine. There's so much that you need to learn when you have a brain injury.
I love how you go technical about that because you've got the information. Go ahead.
Well, the spine is tied into your brain injury. If you hit your head, now aneurysm, it is different. That is not a traumatic blow to the head. And we argue about this sometimes.
You don't get us, no. Go ahead.
A traumatic blow to the head does cause cervical, lumbar, or thoracic spine damage, almost in all occasions.
Well, something I'll tell you is our local support group, when it was first founded, and it's almost 14 years ago now, the Dreamcatchers, the local one that my friend and a spinal cord injury, Josephine Prescott, and Cindy Anzik, my supervisor, founded, we formed it under the umbrella of what was called the HASCI waiver, head and spinal cord injury, because the brain and the spinal cord are connected. And back then, it was seen as more as a head and spinal cord injury because the spinal cord goes right into the brain, or the brain goes right into the spinal cord. And it's not mentioned that way much anymore. But so that's how our group actually started. We actually have some spinal cord injury survivors that come to our support group. And when I met my dear friend Josephine, she helped me, the brain injury survivor, so much more than any other person other than my supervisor, Cindy, that I, when I met her, when I saw how severe her condition was and how kind and loving and how much she cared about helping me, I said, wow, it melted away years worth of pain when I met her, because she lived through some devastating, terrible conditions that no human should ever have to go through, and she smiled about it the whole time, always happy, always wanting to help people. And so that's why we did call ours a head and spinal cord injury survivor group in the beginning. And but something I want to mention is that in North Augusta, South Carolina, we're fixing to have, it's kind of strange to say this because the Brain Injury Association of Georgia is coming to North Augusta, and we're going to have a one-day mini-conference. I'm forgetting the date. I might have posted it on Facebook or anything. I don't know if you guys have seen it.
Yeah, you sent it out. I forgot what date it was, though.
I think
it's
the 16th.
Looked fun.
And there's
is
even going to
be
a...
that couple?
Say that again?
Is that going to be with that couple from Georgia?
They're going to be there, yes. You're talking about Waring and Jane Jackson.
Yes, I
they're
sorry,
awesome. I love them.
Wow.
And there's also going to be a...
met too many people on Brain Injury Radio that were more excited than them. They were phenomenal.
Heading it up. And I asked all about it when I found out. I was so excited because it's only 2.9 miles from where our support group meets. And I said, wow, I've been hoping something like this would happen for a long time. And I talked with them about it, and they said, we want this to be about survivors and caregivers more than anything. And it's free to survivors, and it's $10 to people who aren't survivors that might want to come and learn about it and to find out how they can help. And they are a cool couple, and I can tell they worked this up. And so I talked with her husband the other day, and they were saying, we need to get this thing going. We want to do this all over. They're going to do it all over the state of Georgia, I think 3 or 4 different locations right now. And so I want to recommend that as many people that are listening, if anybody's listening in that area, come on down to North Augusta. I believe it's on the 16th, starting at 9 or 10 p.m., and I don't remember the church name. I need to get the information up. I forgot to bring it up. But
sure. I live in Atlanta for 8 years, and now you're just starting to do this, right?
Yeah. Well, the group is...
I didn't have an injury back then. I might have. I was young, dumb, and stupid. I don't know if that's a brain injury. I don't know if that counts. But I know Augusta is right outside I-20. My wife was at Fort Gordon.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm very familiar with I-20 and that area.
And something, DJ, that you talk about often is Level 1 Trauma Centers. And
yeah.
I believe it's tonight on channel, let me see, what channel is it? It's WJBF TV6, I believe, in Augusta, Georgia. They're going to have a special about traumatic brain injury and, no, Level 1 Trauma Centers is what I meant to say, and why it's so important that you go to one. I thought about you immediately. It's on the 11 o'clock news tonight.
Wow.
It makes no sense whatsoever that somebody presenting with the possibility of, like, a Kim with a sudden explosive headache. I mean, Kim and I are probably... Kim, chime in. When you first experienced your symptoms, was it not the same as mine? I went to the shower. Okay, probably not the shower did it. I started experiencing in the back of my head a very sudden explosive headache. I mean, the pressure was amazing. And it just kept building and building. What did you experience after your aneurysm?
A coma? Is this a trick question?
I mean, did it happen all at once, or did you fall apart slowly like I did?
Oh, well, I mean, the initial impact of when it must have burst was like getting shot or like an axe in your head. But as far as the symptoms, I lost my speech and then my comprehension over the period of the next 24 hours. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. But that's what I'm trying to say. It was slow. It wasn't like, you know, we just passed out and fell down.
Oh, no, no. It was a long night of throwing up and
extreme pain. They're a bitch. They're a whole world.
Yeah. Well, with my aneurysms, I sometimes get them mixed up which one was which, and you've all heard me tell different stories about them. I was thinking about it because I want to make sure I say it correctly. The second one was actually the most severe one. The first one, I was on my job, and it's just like boom inside of my head, and it looked like an explosion. The vision even stretched in my eyes, and then suddenly started my face. They said I was turned instantly blood red, then pale, and I screamed and collapsed on the floor. It was a cement floor in the factory. But somebody got me up and said, "What's wrong, Les Paul? What's wrong? What's wrong?" And I'm saying, "I can't see. My vision's running across my eye, disappearing. I can't see where I'm at. Somebody help me, help me, help me." And I don't remember if it was my supervisor or who, but they just threw me in the car and took off. I remember someone picking me up. They said, "The ambulance can't get here fast enough. You're dying, I can tell." And I was drenched in sweat. And I was just
it
screaming.
It goes that fast. That's what a lot of – I don't mean to interrupt.
That's all right.
That, it goes that fast. Once the brain starts bleeding, it goes that fast.
Yeah.
I mean, I worked 81 hours the week that I got hurt. And I went to the shower, and I was going to go out to eat with a friend of mine, and everything was great. We're in Cape Canaveral, Florida. We're going to go to Cocoa Beach Pier, have a nice dinner. And next thing I know, I'm being carried down the stairs. Oh, my God.
Well, since this is titled Lost and Found Life After TBI, what did it take to help you find yourself again after that?
Brain Injury Radio.
I would say that, too. But there were also some things in the middle because it was such a long period of time for me. Discovering Brain Injury Radio, I consider to be one of the very highest things in my whole life.
And I have become very, very, very solid. I talk to Craig, I don't want to say several times a month, but we talk as needed over the last couple of years. And, you know, three years ago, yes, Joe Martin's group and you know, Craig had TBISN, but there really wasn't that much even 3 years ago. And I started the team high-level group, but I really wanted people to come there for answers, not just to post links for answers. I want answers for
people. A real place with real people who have real substance.
And real problems and real answers can come forward. And I'm thinking about opening it up again. I haven't mentioned that much lately, but there's not a lot of growth. There's only 150 people in this group, and there's probably about 105 people that will contribute. There's about 35 people that, you know, they were let into the group and they'll never contribute. But I'm thinking about opening it back up to TBI support group, team high level, just the way it was first opened up, and get it back opened up again. But you got to be careful. You just got to be careful.
Very, very true. Well, during that long journey that I was taking, I just felt like nobody wanted me. I felt so lost inside of myself that it felt like, who'd want to even talk to me? My mother would talk to me sometimes and said, Les, you're back talking again. You're back functioning some again. What about your job? They held my job open for, I believe, 2 or 2.5 years for me, and said they. My mother said they called my supervisor.